Martin Walker, who is Washington Bureau Chief for the British newspaper The Guardian and a frequent contributor to our program as well, Martin Walker has a new book out on President Clinton called The President We Deserve. It's based on years of observation of American politics and of this particular president, observations which reach right back to the years that President Clinton spent in England on a Rhodes Scholarship. Martin Walker, you were there, as you would say, at university when he was there?
Yes, our paths crossed at Oxford when he came over and was a most unusual American student because the majority of Americans who came tended to be Ivy League types. And Bill Clinton was such an obvious Southerner, talking about his wonderful watermelons back in Hope, Arkansas, always seeming to sprawl over two or three chairs at once, and also having no time for that fashionable sense of gloom about an America where the campuses were erupting in revolt against the Vietnam War and where the inner cities were in flames. Clinton would always argue that America would finally get things right.
I was interested to see that all of the things you might imagine the Bill Clinton that we know now would have been involved in, like the Oxford Union, the debating society. He paid no attention to that. He didn't take a degree. You say he spent all his time reading.
He was not in any sense a leader at Oxford, neither in the debating society nor in Oxford politics nor in the anti-war movement against Vietnam. He spent his time socializing, reading, playing rugby, traveling. He'd get these enthusiasms. He was reading the poems of Dylan Thomas and decided to go off and look for Dylan Thomas's birthplace. He told me once he read 300 books in his first year at Oxford. I think it was a time out for him, away from this endless, dedicated ambition, careerism, which had marked his life at Georgetown University in Arkansas and was to mark it thereafter.
In the introduction to the book, you said that Bill Clinton is a palimpsest of a man. Now, explain that.
I think I want to say what you see in him depends on your angle of vision, that he is in many ways a protean type. He's something of a blank slate. And I'm very struck by the way in which he seems to evoke such extraordinarily differing views. Some people loathe him. They see him as a kind of evil incarnate, representative of all of the worst of American appetites and self-indulgences of the 60s. I tend to see him as really a figure of much greater importance, as somebody who really has charted a rather new course for the way America will relate to the world in the 21st century. It's going to be, I think, not the global military leadership of the Cold War era, but much more of a commercial leadership to create a free trading committee of democracies. And I think that's going to be Clinton's biggest legacy.
You give him pretty high marks for his venturing into trade. But in almost every other chapter of that part of the book, the Clinton presidency seems to be off course, off track, careening toward disaster. I mean, there are plenty of places in the book where if you had stopped right there, and that's all you knew about Bill Clinton, you would be completely undone by the prospect that he was about to be reelected.
One of the curious things about America is the way in which you will take a governor from a small state with no international or national security experience, plunge him into the presidency, and then decapitate the entire federal bureaucracy of its top 5,000 posts, all of the policymakers. They all go, and you equip your brand new, inexperienced president with a bureaucracy of governmental virgins. This is almost a recipe for early disasters, and I think we can all recall the difficulties that Ronald Reagan had in 81 and 82 in the economy. We can recall the difficulties that Jimmy Carter had in 77, and Bill Clinton was no different. It took a long time to figure out a number of things. It took a long time to figure out, first of all, how to deal with a Democratic Congress that was deeply suspicious of Clinton's centrism. It took a very long time to deal with the media. And I think one of the great mistakes that the Clintons made was to be quite so arrogant in their treatment of particularly the White House press corps in their first few months. Thirdly, I think we tend to underestimate the degree to which the Clintons were quite paranoid when they came into the White House that they were surrounded by enemies. Clinton, I think, showed a great skill in climbing the learning curve of the presidency.
Did you expect him to succeed as well as he has apparently succeeded? I mean, he's moving into an election where he's looking very good.
One thing I really try to do in this book, which I think is a bit different, is try and explain not just what made Clinton the politician he is and why I think he is so representative of all of the social revolutions of post-war America, that he is the president that America deserves, but also to explain how it was that here we are on the brink of a new election and Clinton looks as though he's going to get re-elected. After all the disasters, all the controversy, all of the scandals, it really is a remarkable political turnaround, and I have never seen, I think, a political epic quite like the way in which Clinton delayed, diverted, blunted, and finally defeated that surging Republican momentum of 1994-1995. I've seen nothing like it, I think, since watching Mikhail Gorbachev trying to bring about perestroika in the Soviet Union. It was quite a tactical performance by Clinton.
Martin Walker is the Washington bureau chief of The Guardian. His book is called The President We Deserve.